Welcome back to the Deep Dive. It is January 2026.
It is.
And I want everyone to just, you know, take a breath and acknowledge that for a second. We are officially deep into the latter half of the 20s.
Hard to believe.
It really is. And the reason I bring it up is because today we're looking at a topic that, honestly, 5 or 6 years ago, it felt like it belonged in a sci-fi novel.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a very questionable Reddit thread.
Exactly. We're talking about real estate tokenization.
Mm.
And you're right. Back in, say, 2021, if you said that word, people either pictured flying cars or they pictured a Ponzi scheme.
Mm-hmm.
There is very, very little middle ground. It was one or the other.
Right. It was the Wild West. Mm-hmm. But I've been reading through this this really comprehensive report on the state of the market now in 2026.
Right.
Looking at insights from the Gamma blog and platforms like Osul Gamma. And my biggest takeaway is actually kind of funny.
Yeah.
The headline isn't "The revolution is here."
No.
The headline is, "Wow, this got boring."
And you mean that as a compliment, I hope? I absolutely do. In finance, boring is great. It usually means it actually works.
Right.
It means we're not talking about the technology anymore. We're talking about the utility. But I do want to challenge that boring label for a second. Because while the tech might be stable, the implications for an investor, they're actually pretty radical.
That is the shift. That's exactly it. We're not here to hype a blockchain.
No.
If we were doing this show 3 years ago, we'd spend 20 minutes just explaining what a distributed ledger is.
Oh, for sure.
Today. Nobody really cares about the plumbing. The entire conversation has moved from, is this possible, to, is this investment structure credible?
And that shift from possibility to credibility, that's everything.
That's where all the interesting stuff is happening.
So let's unpack that credibility piece. I was reading the definition of tokenization in the Gamma report, and it just struck me how strict the language is now.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, tokenization just meant I made a digital coin and said it represents a house.
Right. A vague claim.
Very vague. Now, the definition is incredibly specific. It's about representing an interest in a property through digital tokens that are backed by, and this is the key, legal structures.
And that legal structure part is what was missing in all those early experiments.
So explain that to me. When I buy a token in 2026, I'm not digitally buying a brick and a wall, am I? What am I actually holding?
You're holding a security. That's the short answer.
Okay.
But to get a little more granular, you are usually buying a share in what's called a special purpose vehicle, an SPV. It's often an LLC that holds the actual deed to that property.
I see.
The token is just the digital receipt. It's the representation of your share in that LLC.
Okay, so the token is the wrapper.
Exactly. The perfect analogy is, you know, the move from vinyl records to MP3s. The asset, the music is exactly the same. You're still listening to the Beatles.
Right.
But the delivery mechanism changed from a physical disc to a digital file.
Mm.
In real estate, the asset is still building, still has tenants and toilets.
And leaky roofs.
The token is just the MP3 format for the ownership deed. It makes it portable, divisible, and programmable.
I like the MP3 analogy, but let me push back on it a bit. Because with an MP3, I can copy it a million times. With real estate, scarcity is the entire point.
That's a great point.
The report talks about this concept of efficiency, not magic. And I feel like a lot of people still think blockchain magically fixes all the problems of real estate.
And that is the single most dangerous misconception. The report is very, very clear on this. Tokenization improves record keeping.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the back office administration faster. It makes transparency easier.
Yeah.
But it does not change the fundamental nature of the property.
Right. If the roof leaks, the blockchain doesn't fix it.
Exactly. And this brings up what sophisticated investors are looking at now, which is called the Oracle problem.
The Oracle problem? What's that?
So a smart contract is just code. It executes automatically.
Mm-hmm.
If rent is paid, distribute dividends to token holders. Simple.
Sounds great.
But yeah. How does the code know the rent was actually paid?
Someone has to tell it.
Correct. Some person or a bank API has to input that real-world data onto the chain. That connection point is an oracle.
I see.
So even with this decentralized tech,
Yeah. You
still have to rely on the accuracy of that input. You can't just trust the code. You have to trust the property manager who is feeding the code.
Which brings us right back to the boring part, the management.
The boring, crucial part.
But before we get there, I want to look at the evolution. Because the contrast between that tech demo era and today, 2026, it's just stark. The report calls it the shift to legal centricity.
It's a complete 180-degree turn. In 2021, the whole focus was technical capability.
Right.
Developers were just showing off that they could put a house on chain. But if you looked at the fine print, the legal enforceability was, well, let's call it gray.
Gray is being very generous. I remember reading about projects where if you lost your private key, you just lost your house, period. No recourse.
Yes. Code is law was the mantra.
Yeah.
But in 2026, we know that law is law. The whole sector has matured to where the legal structure sits right at the center. The token is secondary. If you lose your access key now, there is a legal process to recover your asset because your name is on a registry at that SPV level.
So the lawyers finally beat the coders.
They didn't beat them. They married them. And that union created what we call regulatory engagement.
Okay.
Platforms now operate entirely within securities regulations. We're talking about compliance with, you know, Regulation D or Regulation S in the U.S. or equivalent laws globally. They aren't trying to bypass the SEC anymore. They're filing paperwork with them.
That leads to a funny contradiction I noticed. Do you remember the biggest promise of tokenization, like way back when? Instant liquidity.
Yes, real estate that trades like a stock.
Exactly. The idea was I could sell my piece of an apartment at 3:00 a.m. on a Sunday to some guy in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at the market today, that's not really happening, is it?
No, and for a very good reason. Real estate is inherently illiquid. You can't value a building every second the way you value a share of Apple.
That makes sense.
If you allowed instant high-frequency trading on a building, you'd get these massive volatility disconnects from the actual asset's value.
So what we have now is more like structured liquidity.
Exactly. The report highlights that expectations have been managed. We see lockup periods. We see defined trading windows.
Like once a month or once a quarter.
Precisely. It's much more disciplined. And frankly, it protects the asset value from panic selling.
Okay, so if the instant liquidity hype is gone and it's just a, quote, boring legal structure, why is so much money flowing into this in 2026? What is the actual value add here?
The report really nails this. It lists three main drivers: access, diversification, and yield.
Let's start with access. This is the whole fractionalization argument.
It is, but in 2026, it's not just about I can buy a slice. It's about what you can buy a slice of.
Right. Historically, if I had, say, $5,000 to invest in property, I couldn't buy a commercial office building. I couldn't even buy a rental house in most cities.
No. You were stuck with savings accounts or stocks, basically. High-quality, institutional-grade commercial real estate was a gated community.
Yeah.
You needed millions just to get through the gate. Tokenization just lowers that minimum ticket size. Now your $5,000 can buy a fraction of a $50 million building. You get exposure to an asset class that was completely off limits.
Let me play devil's advocate, though. If I'm buying a fraction, am I paying some kind of convenience premium? Usually when you buy smaller packages of things, the price per unit is higher.
That is a sharp question. And in the early days, yes, there were high fees.
Okay.
But technology is deflationary because the blockchain automates all the investor management. Sending out hundreds of tiny dividend payments costs fractions of a cent. The fees have come way down. You're not paying a massive premium for access anymore.
Which brings us to diversification. I think this might be the killer app for the average person.
I agree.
I have friends who own one investment property, just one. And it stresses them out so much. If the tenant leaves, boom, zero income.
That is concentration risk in a nutshell.
Yeah.
You're betting everything on one roof, one boiler, one tenant.
Exactly.
With tokenization, you can take that same capital and spread it across 10 tokens in 10 different buildings in 10 different cities. You de-risk your entire portfolio.
And you don't have to fix the toilets.
You do not have to fix the toilets. It's a wise policy.
It's my number one policy.
And that third driver is yield visibility. We're in a market environment in 2026 where people are, they're skeptical of growth at all costs. They want cash flow. They want to see the money.
The flight to quality.
Precisely. After the crypto winters and all the volatility of unbacked assets, investors want digital efficiency, but they want it anchored to something real. They want a token that pays rent, not a token that pays in vibes.
Let's talk about a specific example because this is all a bit abstract. The report points to Osul Gamma as a prime case study of this mature 2026 model.
Yes, Osul Gamma is fascinating because they really represent this operational tool philosophy.
Yeah, operational tool. What does that mean?
It means they don't see tokenization as the product. The real estate is the product.
Okay.
Tokenization is just the back-end tool to make it run better. If you log into a platform like Osul Gamma, it doesn't look like a chaotic crypto exchange with charts flying up and down every second.
I've seen screenshots. It looks calm. It looks like a dashboard.
It looks like a REIT dashboard, a real estate investment trust. You see your assets, You see property details, occupancy rates, maintenance reports. You see your accrued yield.
And this connects back to what you said about the Oracle. The platform is integrating the property management data directly into that dashboard for you.
Right. And here's the magic part that actually works. Distributing the funds. In a traditional private equity deal, sending quarterly returns to 500 investors is a nightmare of spreadsheets and bank transfers.
I can imagine.
On Osul Gamma, the smart contract handles it. The rent comes in, expenses are deducted, and the net income is instantly pushed to the wallets of all the token holders.
So the transparency isn't just, I can see the blockchain. The transparency is, I can actually see the profit and loss statement of the building.
Exactly. It's transparency 2.0. In the old days, transparency meant, here's the transaction hash.
Right.
Now, it means standardized disclosures. You can compare cap rates. You can see the management fees laid out clearly. You can make an informed decision because the data is standardized.
That sounds great for the investor. But who is this investor? The report breaks it down, and it's a weird mix of people who usually don't hang out at the same parties.
It really is. You have the beginners, obviously, who love the low entry point. But the really interesting crossover is between the crypto natives and the traditionalists.
So the crypto natives are the ones who made money in Bitcoin and ETH.
Right. They're comfortable with wallets. They hate paperwork. They don't want to call a broker.
Mm.
But they've grown up.
Uh-huh.
They have real wealth now, and they want to preserve it. They're realizing that, you know, Dogecoins might not be the best retirement plan.
Probably not.
So they're moving their crypto gains into tokenized real estate because it speaks their language. It's digital, it's fast, but it's stable.
And then on the other side, you have the professionals. Why would a high net worth individual or a family office bother with tokens? Can't they just buy the whole building?
They can, but even for them, the paperwork is a huge headache. They appreciate the compliance side of it. They like that the platform handles all the KYC and AML checks automatically. It just streamlines their workflow.
Okay, we've been pretty positive so far. But this is the deep dive. We have to look at the dark side. We need the sober second thought.
Mm-hmm.
The expert in the report dropped some serious reality checks about risk.
And this is absolutely crucial. If you take nothing else away from this, take this. Tokenization reshapes risk. It does not remove it.
Reshapes risk. That sounds a little like consultant speak. Break that down for me.
Okay. You've removed the risk of I can't afford to enter.
Right.
You've maybe reduced the risk of bad record keeping, but you have introduced new risks.
Yeah.
First and foremost, platform risk.
This is the big one for me. If I buy a token on a platform and that platform goes bankrupt, what happens to my money?
In a properly structured environment like what we see in 2026, there should be asset segregation.
Meaning?
Your money and the platform's money should never touch. The SPV that holds the house should be bankruptcy remote from the platform. But legal battles are messy.
Right.
If the platform goes down, even if you technically own the asset, accessing it might become a legal nightmare. You could be stuck in limbo while the courts figure out how to transfer the keys.
That is terrifying. And then there's the tech risk. We talked about smart contracts being great, but code is written by humans.
Yeah.
Humans make typos.
Exactly. Smart contract risk. If there is a bug in the dividend distribution code, funds could get stuck or worse, drained. Now, mature platforms have audits. They have insurance. But it's a non-zero risk that just doesn't exist if you buy a house with cash.
And what about market depth? We mentioned structured liquidity, but what happens if I need to sell my token during the trading window and nobody wants to buy it?
That's market depth risk. Just because the platform allows you to sell doesn't mean a buyer exists.
Hmm.
If the real estate market is crashing, or if that specific city is having a downturn, you might just be holding a bag. The liquidity is only as good as the demand. You aren't selling to the platform. You're selling to other users.
So if the buyers disappear, you're locked in.
You're locked in.
So really, at the end of the day, you still have to think like a real estate investor, not a crypto trader.
100%. You have to look at the underlying asset. Mm-hmm. Is the building in a good location? Is the tenant reliable? What is the cap rate? If you're buying a token just because tokenization is the future, but the building is a dump in a dying town,
yeah.
You just made a bad investment.
It's the lipstick on a pig theory. A digital token representing a bad building is just a digital bad building.
Precisely.
So let's bring this all together. It's January 2026. We are not in the sci-fi movie anymore. We're in the documentary phase.
That's a great way to put it. We have absolutely moved from tech demos to financial instruments. The novelty is gone, which is exactly why the big serious money is finally here.
And my big takeaway from looking at Osul Gamma and the Gamma Report is that the responsibility has shifted back to the user.
How so?
Well, when things were difficult to buy, the friction protected you. You had to think for weeks while all the paperwork went through. Now you can click a button.
That is the double-edged sword. Friction used to be a safety mechanism. Now that the friction is gone, your own critical thinking is the only safety mechanism you have left.
So as we wrap up, here's the provocative thought I want to leave everyone with. We spend so much time analyzing the mechanism of investment. Is it a token, a REIT, a direct buy? Mm-hmm. But in a world of instant access, maybe we need to spend less time looking at the wrapper and a lot more time looking at what's actually inside.
I agree completely. The mechanism is digital, but the diligence must remain analog. Read the disclosures, check the occupancy rates. Don't let the ease of the click turn off your brain.
Don't let the click turn off your brain. I think that's going to be my motto for 2026.
A good one to live by.
Thank you all for listening to this deep dive. It's a brave new world out there, regulated, structured, and yes, delightfully boring. We'll catch you on the next one.